You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Ukraine and Russia have agreed to a deal on Friday that would allow the resumption of vital grain exports from the Ukrainian Black Sea ports. It is a major diplomatic breakthrough aimed at easing a global food crisis sparked by the war. The world shortage of Ukrainian grain since the invasion has left millions at risk of hunger. Ministers from both countries signed an agreement brokered by the United Nations and Turkey in Istanbul. And this follows months of negotiations and promises to unblock ports on the Black Sea to allow safe passage of grain and oilseeds, some of Ukraine's most important exports. Russia has so far been blocking maritime access to the ports, meaning that millions of tons of Ukrainian grain has not been exported to the many countries that rely on it. However, following a strike against the Odessa port on Saturday, the deal could hang in the balance. And in the last day, Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov dismissed claims that Russia caused the global food crisis. In a speech to the Arab League ambassadors in Cairo, he accused Western nations of trying to impose their dominance over others, saying that the Western nations' aggressiveness in imposing sanctions on Russia indicated one simple conclusion: that it is not about Ukraine, it is about the future of the world order. I spoke to Professor Stephen Hoadley on the matter, wanting to gain his perspective on the deal and how it could be threatened by Russia's unwillingness to cooperate. With what's going on in Ukraine with grain exports, could we first discuss the deal that was reached between Russia and Ukraine on Friday?
Yes, the Friday deal between Russia and Ukraine, if you're an optimist, it gives you a little glimmer of hope that maybe this war can be managed in a more humane fashion. It doesn't mean the war is over. It just means that the Russians have come to realize that the Ukrainians do have shore-to-ship missiles. They have mines. They have the ability to strike back at Russian ships. The Russians need to export their grain and their fertilizer as well through the Black Sea, and they have actually sat down, well, not literally at the same table. They've sat at separate tables, but they have acknowledged that Ukraine is at least sovereign enough to sign an agreement to facilitate the export of grain, both Russian grain and Ukrainian grain, out of the Black Sea through the minefields, past the missiles, past the patrol boats, and the other hazards that these ships will face. As long as they can cooperate, they've got the hazards mapped, they can chart a channel through the minefield, they can agree not to missile strike each other's ships. And the good news then for the grain consumers of Middle East and West Africa is that the prices of grain will come down, the supplies will go up. So from a humanitarian point of view, it's a great triumph for Guterres, the Secretary General of the United Nations, who brokered this agreement. And it shows again to the optimist that the United Nations is not irrelevant. The United Nations, well, it can't stop major wars. At least it can play a very useful role in humanitarian relief.
And the deal is at this moment for the next 4 months. Is that enough time for reevaluating and making sure that it goes through?
Yes, the sunset clause of 4 months is a slight worry. It's a kind of insurance policy on both sides. But if the current figures that we've seen in the public notices that some 5 million tons of grain can be exported each month, that means 20 million. That's about the size of the stockpile stuck in Ukraine at the moment. So hypothetically, if everything goes well, the silos can be emptied in Ukraine and ready for this year's harvest later in the autumn, which is good news. So all of that would move out through the Black Sea, past Turkey, into world markets. So that's a good thing. It can be renewed if the two sides can agree. And that's the big question. Can it be renewed? Because no doubt there will be stoppages, there'll be accidents, there'll be maybe bad faith. As you know, the Russians have struck Odessa with a couple of missiles. Are the Russians just playing games and going to renege on this agreement? Are they negotiating in good faith? Will they carry through with it? So CAP is a worry, and it'll be one of the jobs of the Secretary General of the UN to try to extend that deadline and to keep the supply lines open, not only for last year's harvest, but also for the coming harvest of this year, and keep that grain and the fertilizer and the sunflower oil and other commodities going out to those who really need it in the third world.
As you mentioned, the Odessa attack on Saturday is already in direct violation of what the deal proposes, that there would be safe passage. Does it mean that the deal could be in the balance?
If the strikes on Odessa do call in question whether the Russians are operating in good faith, again, if you take the optimistic point of view, it could have been an overexcited naval commander who launched those missiles. Apparently, they did come from the sea, from the Black Sea fleet of the Russian Navy. And maybe this was more part of a prearranged strike before the deal was done. But if you're a pessimist, you would say, look, this is Russia simply bullying Ukraine to say, we can strike you anywhere, anytime with our missiles. And it's true, they can. And this is a great constraint. So the Russians are essentially saying, look, we're going to be magnanimous. We're going to let the grain flow. We're going to get the propaganda benefit in the third world of being the party that facilitates the grain that is so essential. But we are going to continue the war, and the Ukrainians would be best simply to surrender and let us manage Ukraine affairs and avoid further conflict. So the Russians are, as one person put it, they're negotiating with two hands or with two tongues. One is to appear to be reasonable international partners and responsible to get the grain out. On the other hand, being customarily Russian in their aggressive military tactics towards Ukraine.
Western officials have accused Russia of strangling the supply chain during the war. However, the foreign minister of Russia has hit back and said that Western nations are controlling the New World Order. And this was in a conference. And how does this kind of chess game affect the deal and affect grain supplies in the future?
You talk about the world order, the rules-based international order. It's more than just a chess game. It's the rules. It's the chess board. It's the players on the board. It's the way in which each player can move. This is really at the root of the conflict. After World War II, the United States and the Western allies set up the alliance system. They set up the various U.S. military bases around the world to more or less keep the peace, to stabilize the boundaries of governments around the world where they were at the end of World War II, with a couple of exceptions. And the Chinese and the Russians and the Iranians and the North Koreans are violating these rules. Now, they claim that these are unfair rules, and we would say, no, they are very fair rules. The humanity has gotten wealthier than ever before in human history under these rules, that is, relative stability. Leave aside the Vietnam War, leave aside the Iraqi War, leave aside the Korean War. With those exceptions, the world has been more stable. You can read an article in this morning's Herald, for example, that the world, in fact, mortality rates have gone down, nutrition levels have gone up, more people are surviving, more people are eating, the population is growing, humanity is doing better under the rules that, yes, admittedly, the Western countries did set the rules, but they are good rules in which China has become the second richest, soon to be the first richest country in the world by trading within those rules. So in many respects, the West would argue, look, the rules benefit our rivals as well as our friends, and they aren't designed to dominate the world. They're designed to provide some sort of legal stability so that legitimate commerce and innovation can take place. And humanity, although there'll be great inequalities, but on balance, on the average, humanity will be the benefactor. So it is a clash of ideologies in the end, and in many respects, that's why the West is supporting Ukraine against the rule-breaking behavior of the Russians, backed by the Chinese tacitly, and that it is more than just a squabble over a piece of territory called Ukraine. It's a clash of values, of the vision of how the world should be organized.
In terms of Egypt and the other African nations that Sergei Lavrov are visiting, what are the benefits of having them on that side?
During the Cold War, the Soviet Union had its client states, and Egypt was one of them, and the United States had its client states, and all of Europe and New Zealand and dozens of others were on the U.S. side. It was called the free world versus the Soviet world. Well, it looks like things are shaping up sort of in a similar way, that China, Russia have this friendship agreement. They're working closely with North Korea, with Syria, with Iran, and other countries, Venezuela, Cuba. And the West is trying, through Biden, his visit to Europe, to stitch up closer relations with Europe and Great Britain, and Australia, New Zealand, Japan, Korea, India even, in the Indo-Pacific concept. So the two leaders, Russia and China, on the one side, the United States and Europe on the other, are trying to attract countries like Egypt. Now, Egypt is problematic. Egypt is not a democracy. It's a very unsavory military dictatorship in many respects. But it's an essential country. It's an important country of the Middle East. And that each side is wooing Egypt, trying to get Egypt to move in their direction. And so it is a competition like the Cold War between the two centers of power to bring in support allies or partners or aligned countries to give them moral support and legitimacy to their particular view of how the world should be organized and who should be the leader of that organized world. So the African countries are, in a sense, you mentioned a chess game, they're in a sense pawns. They're in support of the two kings, Russia, China on the one side, United States, Europe on the other. They are important support players, and maybe some will be sacrificed along the way. Others will become very important turning point in the competition, in the global chess game. But so each country has to be taken on its merits, and they will make up their own mind, like the Pacific Island states will make up their mind whether they want to entertain China as a security partner or stick with us, the traditional security partners in this region. So the world is a very competitive place right now, and the stakes are very high, and behind it all is looming, if things escalate, a possibility of some sort of nuclear exchange. So we want to be very careful not to get anywhere near that possibility, because then we'll all be losers. It's a challenging time to be a national leader and to try to walk the balance between standing firm for your principles on the one side, but avoiding antagonizing your rivals on the other to the point where a nuclear exchange becomes a possibility.
That was Professor Stephen Hoadley speaking to me about the grain crisis, the potential deal, and the disinformation campaign that Russia has embarked on.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.